All rise. Oye, oye, oye. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, draw a mind, give your attention, for this court is now in session. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Good morning. We're here today to hear the case of Seegers versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. The docket number in this case is 081449. To my left is Judge Sholin. To my right is Judge Lance. Who will speak for Mr. Seegers?
Douglas Rosinski for Mr. Seegers in replacement of Mr. Hayes.
Okay, Mr. Rosinski. Thank you. And who will speak for the Secretary?
Laura Catelli.
Okay, thank you very much. Because we're dealing in the first instance with the motion of the Secretary to strike the appellant's brief, we'll permit the Secretary to go first. And let me say this, too, if you saw in our order that because Mr. Rosinski has traveled from South Carolina, if he so chooses and if he has time, we'll give him the opportunity to talk on the merits because he's already here. Again, if he so chooses and if he has time. If he does not, and or if he does not feel he has a full opportunity to discuss the merits of the case, you're welcome to file a motion for oral argument, and we'll deal with that. But since you've traveled from South Carolina, we wanted to provide that opportunity to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. We will speak to the merits of the issue that is dispositive of the case.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Laura Catelli, and at counsel's table is Catherine Chase. We're representing the Secretary in the matter before the Court today. I respectfully ask for 5 minutes of time for rebuttal.
Granted. Make it so.
In response to the Court's questions, the first question regards to what extent, if any, this Court can consider the claimant's descriptions of documents that were not in the record before the Board in establishing that the Secretary failed to satisfy his duty to assist the appellant. The Secretary respectfully submits that this Court should limit its review only to the records that were before the Board and the Secretary. The Secretary submits that the
Court... Of course, the appellant in this case has not offered these documents for consideration in the merits. Isn't that correct?
To my understanding, after reading the brief, that they were offered for the merits of the case.
Well, in the papers that were filed with regard to the motion to strike, it's my recollection that appellant specifically said these documents were referred to in the brief only for the purpose of bolstering his allegation that the Secretary failed in the Secretary's duty to assist.
Yes,
and that's what we're talking about right now, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
However, the Secretary would respectfully submit that there's no distinction between referring to the actual documents and their description. However, this Court can review those documents to decide whether or not they belong in the record before the agency. The Secretary would also note that the documents and the descriptions of these documents are not VA-generated documents. Therefore, they were not actually or constructively before the Board.
Okay, thank you.
In regard to the second question that the Court has asked, regarding whether or not the Secretary had a duty to obtain records held by appellant's prior private attorney, the Secretary submits that the VA did not have an obligation to get those records because the appellant did not put VA on notice that he was represented by a prior private attorney and did not authorize the Secretary to obtain those records.
Was that a matter of record?
Yes, Your Honor.
then how could the secretary not be on notice?
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question.
Was the fact that he was represented by an attorney at the before the Social Security Administration a matter of record in the record? Was it referred to at all in the record?
No, it was not.
Okay.
Your Honor. Also, to my knowledge, from reading the record, the appellant was not represented by an attorney in a Social Security matter.
Well, if in reading the record, you could determine that the individual was not represented by an attorney, and how did you come to that conclusion?
There was no reference in the record that the appellant was represented by an attorney.
Okay. Sorry, Judge Lance.
Counselor, wasn't he represented by an attorney who received this October 86 letter?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that was the Social Security claim?
Again, to my knowledge, I don't believe that he had a Social Security claim. After reading the documents that were proffered by the appellant with his motion for remand that was subsequently withdrawn, it appears the attorney represented the appellant in a private lawsuit.
Okay. Okay. But not a VA-related matter?
Correct.
And the Fort Gordon deposition that much ado has been made of was a workman's comp claim down in South Carolina, was it not?
I assume so, but I'm not positive.
Well, it's not a VA-related matter to your knowledge?
Correct.
Okay. And isn't the pivotal question here whether or not the October 86 letter that refers to a previous examination put the VA or the board on notice that there's something more out there?
With regards to an attorney, the secretary submits no. The VA was not on notice that there was an attorney. However,
No, in terms of additional documentation.
I understand. The letter itself, the October 1986 letter, Your Honor, in the first statement of the letter, it states that this doctor, Dr. Ehrlich, had previously reported. And if you continue to read the letter, it appears that he just is summarizing his previous letter. So with regard to whether or not the secretary should then go out and get the original letter, the secretary submits that there was no obligation since the appellant did not specifically request assistance and did not authorize the secretary to contact this doctor on his behalf.
So if the October 86 instrument is viewed as a summary of those communications that had previously transpired, then anything beyond that point would basically be cumulative evidence anyway.
Correct.
Right.
Well, don't we have case law, for example, the recent Federal Circuit decision in Moore, that where there was a 5-page summary of his hospitalization prior to his discharge from service, but then the VA didn't go on to get the service records, that the Federal Circuit said that this summary was not necessarily sufficient because there could be other information in there that would be relevant. And if we haven't seen it, how do we know what it says?
Your Honor, I submit that because these are private records, the appellant would have had to request our assistance, and then we would, if he had requested our assistance and authorized us to contact this private attorney, we would have done so.
Did VA have any obligation to ask him for the names of doctors or whether there was any other information that might be relevant?
Yes, and in fact, Your Honor, VA did send the veteran a notice regarding what his duties were, what VA's duties were, what types of information he could submit, and how VA can assist him in obtaining information he would like to substantiate his claim.
Does the record show that at any time the appellant ever asked VA to get these additional records from Dr. Ehrlich?
No, Your Honor. However, he did at one point ask the VA to obtain records from Fort Gordon, Georgia, and we did so.
Was that deposition?
No, Your Honor. The records at Fort Gordon, I would like to make a point of noting that Fort Gordon is an Army Medical Center, not a VA Medical Center, and the appellant treated at the Army Medical Center after he was discharged from service. We did request his records, his medical records of his treatment that were at Fort Gordon.
Okay. And where is that in the record? Do you know?
I don't have an exact page, but it okay. is in the record.
So what you're suggesting is that the appellant was fully aware of his right to request of the VA assistance in obtaining documents and records, that he exercised that right in obtaining certain records from Fort Gordon, but he did not exercise that right in terms of the disputed instruments before the court today.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Do you have anything further?
Not at this time. Thank you.
What is the specific request that the Secretary is making on your motion?
The specific request that the Secretary is making right now is that this court grant his request to strike the appellant's brief. Appellant has referred to documents by their description that were not VA-generated documents. They were not actually or constructively before the board and the Secretary, and therefore the appellant should not be allowed to refer to such documents.
Are you asking us to strike the brief or to strike, have him refile a brief striking references to those documents?
We respectfully request that you strike the brief.
Would submitting a new brief within a reasonable amount of time, not referring to those documents, satisfy the Secretary?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Anything further?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm proud to be here today representing Mr. Seegers on behalf of Mr. Hayes. I'm pleased to report to the court that young Oliver Hayes has arrived somewhat early on Friday, but he's doing well and is being counseled on paying closer attention to the court's rules about timeliness. With that said, we do appreciate the court's indulgence here. I would ask the court to take notice of a number of cases here. We're on sort of a short schedule, but I would like to summarize the cases and put them in the record because of the sort of the narrowness of the brief, the motions here. With regard to the issue in the Secretary's motion, I would draw the court's attention to Bell v. Derwinski, 2 Vet App 611, Norvell v. Peak, 22 Vet App 194, Washington v. Nicholson, 21 Vet App 191, and Winslow v. Brown, 8 Vet App 469. May be other cases that are relevant there that we may discuss, but I want to make sure that those are in the record. Regarding the court's first issue in its order, Brokaw v. West, 13 Vet App 134, Henderson v. Brown, 10 Vet App 272, Symington v. Brown, 9 Vet App 334, and Washington v. Nicholson, again, 21 Vet App 191. Regarding the court's second and third issues, Hyatt v. Nicholson, 21 Vet App 390, Moore v. Shinseki, 555 F3rd 1369, Murinksack v. Derwinski, 2 Vet App 363, Rollins v. Derwinski, 2 Vet App 481, and Tally v. Brown, 6 Vet App 72. With regard to the initial issue that in the motions, it seems that the Secretary wants to essentially go back to the time of the Ten Commandments and take the literal interpretation of a statute, forgetting all the interstitial and enlightening case law of this court on how to apply 7252. It's essentially the same as going back to thou shalt not kill and forgetting all the case law, including volumes of our own criminal code, that discuss the subtleties of that absolute order. There is not a process for this court to decide the issue in this case. The merit issue in this case is whether the board met the duty to assist on the fact of the document that is the record at 247.
Let me stop you there. How is it you're arguing that the argument in the main brief is that the secretary failed to assist the veteran by obtaining two different documents, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Essentially to explore the underlying examinations of that indicated by that document.
Okay. And those two documents are, first, medical records that were referred to in an opinion letter that the VA relied on, and the Board of Veterans Appeals relied on in its decision, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, both page 11 of its decision and in its statement on page 15.
Now, if you want to argue duty to assist, why can't you argue that the VA had notice of this and failed to assist the veteran by obtaining it?
I believe
why do you need external records to argue that point?
I believe the external records are evidence going to the relevance, which is the second part of the test for whether the court, whether the duty to assist argument.
In that case, we would have to consider them for, from want of a better term, the truth of the matter. In fact, they are, you know, supportive of the, you know, of the VA's obligation, as opposed to the VA's duty to go get the records.
No, Your Honor, I believe that this is a key issue here. The difference between the merits and collateral issues. All right. To look at the documents for the collateral issue of whether they're potentially or may be relevant is a test and a review that this court does, I would venture to say, many, many times a week, if not a day.
So you would ask us, for example, again, in an analogous process, to review those perhaps in camera.
That is one way. The other way is exactly what has happened. We have described those documents. They have all the indicators that are required by 3159C1, which is identifies not only one, but two custodians by name, address, absolutely nailed, and they're both there. Mm-hmm. It also identifies the time frame, 86, maybe 85.
Are there any other documents that you would seek to obtain?
Yes, Your Honor. It turns out,
except for those, I'm talking now about the medical records.
The chain of spreading from that one document that's in the record. The issue is Mr. Seegers was a plaintiff in the asbestos class action that went on in the 80s and the 90s, the huge national case. He has numerous medical records. The deposition was of one of the doctors in that case. Mr. Hayes obtained all this information because he saw that document in the record and called that attorney. And it all flows from there. I have here copies of what was sent to the regional office last year, which is the entire set of documents that flow from that, which I'll be happy to provide to the court. They're unredacted at this point for your information. The point was, that is exactly what Mr. Hayes did. Got all this information. Why we're here today confuses me. It's baffling, because this happens in my practice all the time.
Okay, doesn't it, isn't this a matter? This does happen all the time.
I'm sorry. I need to clarify what you're saying. You're saying that Mr. Hayes has submitted all the information that you're seeking to reference in the brief today already to VA?
Last year, in I believe mid of 2008. But after he took the case, he obtained the information and sent it. It's subsequent to the board decision.
Okay,
but it's in the record at the regional office. Hopefully on remand, it's there already. We also have to put in context, Mr. Seegers is a very ill man. He has got the cancers from asbestosis, which is why he was a plaintiff. He has long exceeded any expectation here. This is very, very frustrating that this very simple issue is here. The case law that I cited.
Okay. I'm sorry. I want to go back to the question I asked you was about to ask you originally. I think you mentioned that the proffer of documents in order to prove their relevance to a particular action is very common in your practice. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. It's happened three times this year, including in front of members of this panel.
I was going to ask you the second question I was going to ask you, which you may have already answered. Aren't we talking about essentially the finder of fact you're offering these documents to for them to, you know, find a fact, to determine whether to consider these as a matter of finding a fact?
the issue of the duty to assist has to look at what wasn't assisted. The secretary's position, if taken to its, it's very plain. You cannot look. This panel, the court cannot look to see what wasn't provided.
Okay, let's go back to the statute. Under 5103, what particular section do you believe, from which do you believe the secretary's duty to find these, let's take for example the medical records first, from which it flows?
(5103)(c)(1), obtaining record for compensation claims. The claimant serves medical records, and if the claimant has furnished the secretary information sufficient to locate such records, other relevant records pertaining to the claimant's military, active military, naval, air service that are held or maintained by the government entity is what the secretary.
Well, you just. Right. Government entity was the last.
That's the government entity. That's what they're focusing on. There is a general duty to assist that the secretary shall make reasonable efforts to assist the claimant in obtaining evidence necessary to substantiate the claimant's claim. The general duty, which this court has numerous cases on, requires a three-part test that is laid out in 38 CFR 3.159C1, corresponding here, that states the three aspects I mentioned. Do they know who the custodian is? Is it reasonable for the board to find the custodian? Does the information available to the VA, or the board in this case, indicate that it is relevant to a specific time period, so you're not fishing? And third, that it identifies the correct condition. There is a case very recently by Judge Davis where they...
Is that a single-judge case?
A single-judge case.
And I don't think we can consider that.
The fact pattern there is relevant, but we'll go on. The issue is, if you take literally...
Excuse me one second. I preempted either judge if you want to talk about a single-judge case.
Oh, no. Proceed.
Counselor, understanding that you inherited this case... From Mr. Hayes, I guess. Can you show me anything in the record where the appellant, the veteran, said to the VA, "Can you get me these records of my attorney or my representative in this class action?"
No, Your Honor, but the...
Okay. Just answer my question one at a time. Dealing with what is called the deposition from Fort Gordon, which was a workman's compensation action in the state of South Carolina, do you have any evidence to indicate that the appellant, in fact, requested the secretary secure those records?
No.
Okay. So, somehow the secretary is supposed to divine that these records are out there, go to a representative appellant's attorney in a civil action and say, "Give me the records of your client." Now, what do you suppose the attorney is going to say?
In this case, he provided the documents.
No, I suppose that most ethical attorneys would say no, not without authority.
He got authority because when Mr. Seeger's attorney contacted him, he had the authority of Mr. Seeger's. As I get calls, every attorney gets calls, got the proper authority and received the documents.
Okay, now let's follow. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, and he did this after the BVA decision, correct?
When he took this case, yes. Okay. It was after, but the documents are well before the BVA decision and are relevant. The issue here,
you answered Judge Lance's question that, you know, there's nothing in the record that would indicate that there was a request, a notification of the secretary that these documents even existed before the BVA decision. So how does the secretary have a duty to obtain private medical records, which they have no knowledge, after they render a final decision?
The premise of the question is incorrect.
Okay.
And if I may explain.
Sorry.
There was no request from the veteran to the VA. There was, Mr. Seeger provided this first document, the RBA 247. That's all he had. He did not have the other documents. He provided that document. That put the VA on notice. Per the instruction, per the regulation 3159, and the case law underneath that exists, that is enough because the board has a responsibility to follow this up. And if I may...
Let me interject, please. VA's counselor just made a distinction between private and public or government records, that in the case of a private record, such as Dr. Ehrlich's report, the veteran would have needed to ask for VA's assistance in securing other records from that doctor.
The regulation, 3159C, also states that if that the VA is supposed to request any authority needed from the veteran. If Mr. Seegers had said, no, I'm not giving you permission, that's a completely different issue.
So you're saying VA sua sponte should have realized that these other records could potentially be helpful to substantiating Mr. Seegers' case?
Yes, and that's not unsupported by case law. If I may, the specific answer to the first question, the first issue from the court, is that is the statement of counsel enough, is supported in case law? Yes, there's a presumption, unless it's rebutted by the secretary, that you trust and believe the assertions of counsel regarding the document. Now, moving on to the second two. Bell v. Derwinski, which we're talking about regarding government documents, goes through and states that, one, often this court must determine whether items counter-designated by appellant were before the secretary and the board when the BVA made its determination. And two, the court cannot accept the board being unaware of certain evidence, comma, especially when such evidence is in the possession of VA, comma, and the board is on notice as to possible existence and relevance. Bell is a specific issue related. In that case, only government documents were before it. The principle is the same. If there's board notice, 3159C tells you what's sufficient, and indeed the Federal Register discussion of that rule specifically states, and I will give you that cite. Let's see if I find it. 66 FR 45620 at 45624425, that the VA needs only enough information to try and retrieve the record. The identity of the custodian of the record is critical. In this case, you had two custodians. And to answer your question, Judge Lance, a little bit more, it doesn't matter whether this gentleman was a lawyer or not. It just happened to be a lawyer. It could have been anyone who had possession of these documents.
But your client never requested that the VA secure those documents. I keep going back to that point. But let me ask you this. Didn't we, or didn't you, and the VA agree to the record before the agency on March 12th, and these documents were not part of the record before the agency?
Well, we agree that the documents were not in the record before the agency. That is the issue, that these documents were found subsequent to the board decision, and actually subsequent to the attorneys becoming involved here who found them. The issue is whether, and I think the sole issue on the merits, as you mentioned before, Judge Hagel, is that if the board had enough information to reasonably make this request and would have gotten this, because we got it the same way, so there's no did they have it, were they lost, then this should be remanded right here.
What page of the record specifically can you tell us that we should look at, or the VA should have looked at, to inform this of this information?
I point to the record of RBA 247, which has been agreed to the parties, is the correct citation. Mm-hmm. But for the record,
you're talking about the medical exam?
It is the October 4th, 1986 record, or a letter between Dr. Ehrlich, okay, and Terry E. Richardson, Jr.
Okay, I understand that. What about the material that the attorneys had? What's the notice document that you believe exists for that would say that the attorney is the custodian of these documents and the VA should have followed up on that?
The very first sentence of that page, of that letter, is
of the doctor's letter.
Of the doctor's letter to the attorney says, I reported from in my review of the slide, and gives it some sections and a date, that he had the carcinoma. And again, that's specifically the condition that's under review here. It is exactly as Judge Sholin said. Moore says if you're on notice, there's examples in here. I point to the Talley case. There was an unknown physician who had referred a veteran to another physician. They had the name of one but not the other. The board itself said, RO, go find this. And when they didn't, the court said that was not sufficient. You had information sufficient to find this, and it was remanded back to do exactly what we're doing here. Also, in the discussion in Hyatt, the relevant evidence, there's a test that you look at. You can look at these documents to see if it needs to be remanded. It doesn't. If the remand issue is taken out, then you go to the merits. You don't look at those documents. You don't consider those documents. The court has case law.
Of course, in Hyatt, they were government records.
Yes, Your Honor. And what I'm saying is, in this case, the rule doesn't exclude any records. It puts a higher burden on the government records for the constructive notice.
I'd like to follow up on Judge Cagle's question. I see where you're pointing to that there were other medical records that were available in the first paragraph. What I'm troubled by is that VA is expected to look at the addressee of the letter and ascertain that that is an attorney, and that that attorney should have been contacted and asked if you had any other records that might have been relevant, which then leads you to the deposition.
That's not an issue, Your Honor. It is. We are not alleging, and the attorney issue is not relevant here. It could have been anyone. What we're saying is there's a medical doctor who's made an opinion on a condition before the board that the board has said we only have a summary of.
Right. I'm not talking about the doctor's opinions or the medical. I mean, I'm not talking about the medical opinions. I'm talking about how do you get to putting VA on notice of the deposition?
Your Honor, how we did it was that we called and happened to get the guy. I'm not advocating for a general rule that there's a duty of the VA to contact any and all potential lawyers. This could have been a congressman. This could have been his wife. The point was they had the doctor. If they couldn't find the doctor, he's dead, he's retired, he's moved, then they had another address. In this specific fact pattern, it happened to be a lawyer. It's not relevant to the issue.
Right, but my question is, the appellant has specifically argued that there is this other deposition available. That doesn't have anything to do with these particular medical records. I could see what you're telling me is Dr. Ehrlich may not be at his current address anymore, and you're trying to get these other two reports. They could have written to Mr. Richardson. But putting that aside, how does writing to Mr. Richardson then get VA to ask for, by the way, do you have a deposition under your mattress?
Yeah, not putting the duty on the VA to ask that question. We didn't ask that question. The lawyer said, oh, yeah, I know Mr. Seegers. I pulled out his file. Here's all this stuff. What do you want? Okay, that's all we're saying. If the board would have gotten no response or got a response from the lawyer that I can't do this without permission and the veteran had said, I'm not giving you permission, that's a private matter, or if they hadn't been told of depositions or that he was a plaintiff in a class action on the exact same disease for the exact same cause, that's fine. And I don't think we need to broaden any rules here. One letter to either side, whether they went to the lawyer first or went to the doctor first, would have generated the natural, reasonable questions. We're not asking for any unreasonable questions or unreasonable outreach. In this specific fact pattern, as in other fact patterns where there was a summary of a group where this PTSD veteran used to go, that was argued that was enough. All right, we're asking for, on this specific fact pattern, whether there was a reasonable responsibility to contact one or the other. I would have contacted the doctor first, obviously, and if the doctor didn't have the deposition, I wouldn't have, and we're not advocating that the board also needed to go to the lawyer. We're saying either one of those meets the requirement of the rule for the board or the VA, the RO, whoever, to reach out and make an inquiry. Do you have records related to this?
If either one is okay, what if they contacted the doctor alone?
And if the doctor would have, on the facts, would appear to be
right
out.
Well, what if they did just contact the doctor and the doctor just said, said, well, here are my opinions, right? My previous opinions don't differ from this one.
And that would have, I believe that would have been enough. And you would have said, look, we reached to the normal person in this chain. We got a response.
And you're, the sole authority, as I understand your argument, that you're relying on is 3.159C, the portion of that regulation that says, for other private records, that the VA must make at least one, they, first of all, they have to make a reasonable attempt, number one, and they only have to make one.
No, no, Your Honor. I also believe that reasonableness depends, as far as the issue of one, it depends on what the response is. And there's numerous cases.
Well, I know what you're talking about follow-up.
Follow-up,
you're right. But I'm talking about the records they initially seek.
Yes, Your Honor. I agree with the second part. The first part of it is not the sole authority. That is the rule. We've got the statute itself, which is interpreted in that rule. It's the Secretary's own rule. And we have the case law that I mentioned before, in case we got to this point where we had not enough time to go over each case. But again, Bell
okay,
itself.
Now let's talk about 5103. I take it you're talking about Big A.
Yes, is that right? Yes, the duty to assist.
Not little A, Big A?
Yes, Your Honor, duty to assist.
What specific provision of that are you relying on?
But again, 5103A, duty to assist. Big A, little A, the general duty to assist.
Okay, doesn't the general duty to assist refer in that statute to various different sections, you know, defining that reasonableness?
Yes,
I mean, that doesn't stand alone in the statute. It says you have to make a reasonable attempt, and with regard to government records, this is the reasonable attempt. With respect to private records, this is the attempt that you must make, et cetera.
Parent B is also applicable. That's assistance in obtaining records. Again, to summarize all of that, yes, the general duty to assist and the duty to assist specific to records. And again, going back to Rogozinski, if you look at that, that was essentially a duty to assist. The court mentioned that it didn't say we never look. What it said was, given the facts in this case, that the foreshadowing of some doctor's records out there was not enough. It's not absolute right from the get-go. That, you know, in this case, if the ruling is it wasn't enough to have this page in there, it's consistent with that. You have to look. It is submitted again to see what is out there, what you're talking about. The court doesn't have to look at these documents. The issue turns on whether, under all the case law, that the information in 247, RBA 247, should have prompted a request. Again, the issue is not whether the veteran, I submit, the veteran has supplied the documents he has in response to the request. There's no case law that, and there's counter case law in the cases I've cited for you, that the board has an independent duty, if there's information in the record, to go and get it. And I challenge the Secretary to show every single case that the veteran has asked for everything in the record. Quite the contrary. The duty to assist is just that the veteran doesn't have to ask for everything. Let me
go back to the statute, because I think it's important to look at the wording of the statute. And I'm sorry, during your argument, portion of your argument before, I didn't look at it more carefully. But I understand the general duty to assist in 5103, big A, little a. Okay. Now, you also refer to sub B of that statute, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. When you read that statute, just for the purposes of everyone so we all understand what we're talking about, it says in subpart 1, as part of the assistance provided under subsection A, the Secretary shall make reasonable efforts to obtain relevant records, including private records, that the claimant adequately identifies to the Secretary and authorizes the Secretary to obtain. So some scattered reference in the record, that's not the claimant. The record's not the claimant. And how does that support your
again,
argument?
The case law here, which, again, we don't have briefs on. But
well, we'll look at the case
the
law.
Case
Let's
law,
look at the statute.
The case law explains that explicitly. It's taken a second first. The authorization of Secretary can be afterwards. If an authorization expires, then the duty is the Secretary to ask for another one. If they're declined, that's a different issue. But it is not required that the veteran go first, that they supply the authorization first, particularly because of the duty of the board and the VA to look through the record. If they find things that weren't anticipated, they go and ask. That is routine. That is the taking the first
part. Well, that's not 5103 little a. Because that says the claimant has to identify him. I mean, little b.
Well, and I will go back to that point. The claimant, you know, we're arguing the claimant did identify it. He provided the document at 247 through 249. Okay. That's what he had. It's in there. The case law is very clear that conveys. If he hadn't provided that, if he had pulled that out now.
I understand. You're saying that because the claimant provided that document, that's the identification.
Absolutely, and that is absolutely consistent. And I would just take the opportunity here to go to the extreme. What happens if the secretary turns out to be right here? The court would have to put blinders on and not review anything.
Okay, let's see. I think, well, I won't speak for everybody else, but I understand your argument, I think. Okay.
All right, Jerry.
But the specific point here is whether or not we should consider those for these extraneous documents that are not in the record for the purposes of determining the VA's duty to assist.
Well, our argument is if the court deems it necessary to do the tests that are in the cases I cited to see if it makes any difference, if it's a dispositive issue, if you decide that it's not remandable because these documents or the argument description of the documents is not enough, even if accepted, then you go on to another level of merits. That's best, okay? That's all we're saying.
Counselor, this is an appellate court. This isn't a trial court. What you're suggesting is that every time this type of argument is made, this court consume additional resources in reviewing these documents, either in camera or presented, and make a determination. Now, if we were to do that, we would then have to get into the Sanders analysis and say, does it make any difference? Was it prejudicial?
Your Honor,
And keep in mind, this is an appellate court. This is not a trial court. And I think that's a huge difference in terms of what you're asking this court to do, not only in this case, but in the future. In this case, it appears to me that someone's trying very artfully and very hard to preserve an effective date when a remedy does exist in terms of reopening the claim with all the documents that you and your client want to present and give the board a fair shot at.
No, Your Honor, it has nothing. As I understand it, the court does this and has to, every court, appellate court or not, has to do this. You do this with jurisdiction. You do this when you review.
Well, jurisdiction, we review de novo.
But the
because that's our jurisdiction.
The principle is the same, Your Honor. There's
The principle is not, I don't believe, is the same. We're talking here about reviewing documents that go in the record or don't go in the record. Why should we review that de novo?
Your Honor, this has been done since Rogozinski. The reported cases, there's at least a dozen that I found over the weekend. And if you do not do this, I leave you with, how do you make the decision on duty to assist? We've had arguments here about loss of records. How you will never be able to resolve this. You will not look at it. And honestly, or whatever, there's going to be a gap, and you will not be able to make that decision. It is not a new decision. You make it all the time. To cut it off throws out 19 years, and I would submit if you're going to go that way, you would need an en banc, because there are numerous panel decisions that do exactly this, including and up to looking at affidavits put in by counsel as argument, that you've looked at it and you went and took those affidavits and looked back at records and done by panels, and that all of that would have to be reversed.
Okay, I see now your time is up.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would leave you with, we believe that you can dispose of this case by finding that the board did not meet its duty to assist, or a reasonable interpretation of this under Gardner is that rule exists and that can be remanded immediately back for the board to resolve all these issues. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Secretary has, how much time did Secretary have left?
She has 20 minutes left. She reserved 5.
Okay, well, we'll give you a little more than 5. I'm not sure we'll give you all 20.
I don't think I'll need the 20, but thank you.
I'd like to jump in before you get a chance to. Speaking only with regard to Dr. Ehrlich's other reports, not the deposition, are we actually even, is the appellant actually asking us to consider something that isn't in the record at all? Because Dr. Ehrlich's report that we do have references these other documents. So in order to decide his argument that VA failed its duty to assist, are we actually having to look at anything beyond the record to make that determination?
No, Your Honor.
So does that leave your argument with regard to striking his brief only with regard to the deposition?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that just this document proves that there's been a duty to assist violation.
Right, but we're not talking about the merits. We're just talking about your motion to strike his brief for referencing documents that are not in the record. Since Dr. Ehrlich's report references these other documents, we're using, potentially, Dr. Ehrlich's report that is in the record to ascertain whether VA failed in getting those other documents.
Well, Your Honor, because those other documents were not actually or constructively before the board, I believe that, or the Secretary submits, that those other records, other than the one that was included in the RVA, cannot be considered at this level.
Would that be a question as to when we get to the merits of deciding, did VA have actual knowledge or constructive knowledge, whether there was sufficient information for VA to have to go get those? So that's more of a merits determination than a should the brief be stricken for even speaking of these question.
Correct.
Okay. So, never mind. Now, please proceed.
The Secretary would like to point out that appellant is asking this court to base supposition upon supposition upon supposition to get these records to, and then the deposition that he has referenced. This is a two-way street. The duty to assist is a two-way street. The appellant cannot passively sit back and wait for the VA to establish and build his case for him. And this court has held that factual data, such as names, dates, places, are straightforward facts which the appellant should provide the VA in order to obtain records.
Don't the cases about name and so forth, don't those refer to the application itself for benefits?
Yes, Your Honor.
So that's a different matter than we're talking about here, the record, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Most importantly here, though, however, is the fact that the appellant was given an authorization for any records that he wished the VA to obtain on his behalf, and he never returned that authorization. VA did not have the authorization to contact Dr. Ehrlich or
okay,
contact...
Are we talking now about the merits here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, I'll give you a chance to talk about the merits. I'm going to... Well, let us deal with this motion first, okay?
Getting back to the motion then, Your Honor, the Secretary submits that this court should strike the brief or because the appellant has referred to documents that were not before the board and the Secretary, and there is no distinction between the descriptions of such documents and the actual documents.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry, did either judge have it? Okay. All right. Subject to objection by either judge, Mr. Brzezinski, I'm going to allow you to talk about the merits of your case. And this is only subject to, you know, how we rule on this motion. And if you want to take the opportunity, you may. Of course, you may reserve that opportunity and, you know, submit a motion for other argument at a different time. I realize that you've just recently come into this case.
Yes, sir. I will speak to the merits on one issue. And
just to make it clear, that we're going to give the VA an opportunity to speak also.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, I will focus on what I believe is a dispositive issue here. If there was a duty to assist violation, which was clearly specified in our brief and before that in tortured history, then this case goes back regardless of what the other issues are. The issue, whether that is germane, is clearly specified in the board's decision at page 11 and the board's unequivocal statement at page 15 that there is no other information out there that could have been gotten.
Well, Counselor, let me interrupt here and say, if we decide that your motion is well taken and we decide to consider the instruments that have been submitted as an offer of proof, examine those documents, and then under the Sanders determination, decide that your client was not prejudiced as a result of the information contained therein, we can dispose of the case right now, can't we?
You can dispose of that issue on the brief. The remaining issues in the brief stand as brief. That is not the only dispositive issue. And I believe, yes, if you find that, conversely, that there was a duty to assist under the test, the three-part test, a duty to assist violation, that's where it ends. If that's not your determination, then you go to the merits, which we believe are ably discussed in the brief. And if the brief needs to be withdrawn and resubmitted, we will obviously do that. But again, there's a lot of issues of judicial efficiency here that, for whatever reason, we've taken this issue well beyond where it normally goes. And if it needs to be resolved, we'll resolve, and we will leave that to the court and follow whatever way we need to, including briefing this issue again if necessary.
Is your sole contention then that, based on the documents in the record, excluding the documents that you provided to us, assume we exclude them?
Yes, sir.
That there's sufficient evidence in the record to remand this case? Is that the argument you make on the merits?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there any other relief that you would want besides a remand based upon that, the record concerning those two documents?
For the issues as specified in the brief, we believe a remand is appropriate, and we have no other issues on the merits.
Do you have anything else other than that?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Okay, Secretary's counsel, I'll give you a minute if you want to confer.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that the Secretary's brief would support his position that the board did not err below and that the board's decision should be affirmed.
So you rely on you have nothing to add besides you have nothing to add besides the arguments in the brief, is what you're saying?
No brief. I'm sorry.
You have nothing to add with regard to the way of argument besides or in addition to what's in your brief, or you don't want to amplify what's in your brief. Is that I understand your position?
You're correct in my motion. Thank you.
Any other questions? The case is submitted. The panel will greet counsel.
All right. Further order.
Thank you for the good. Be interesting to see.